Hey, Chuck, you were saying we're going to talk a little bit about Pat Wood, and great guy, really liked him.
Yeah.
Phenomenal presentation, and you were saying it's what you're saying is kind of and I said wait, let's get going here again, and but you were saying, hey, it goes from China to Germany here and there, and then you use the word aimless, and what I was saying was and I said at the beginning of the program, if this isn't clear what's going on, if this doesn't really clear people up as to the structure of things, why these things are happening, and give them a very, very in-depth and workable understanding, applicable, you know, a practical understanding of what's happening, then nothing's going to do it.
All right. Well,
you know,
yeah,
I'm not the sharpest knife in the block when it comes to this stuff either, but, you know, I have the willingness to be sharper about it.
Oh, John, don't sell yourself short. You're a pretty smart dude, and your listeners, too, you know, out there. So, I mean, I just, again, really appreciate this opportunity to illustrate this, to do this. I do this a lot in my newsletters, but, you know, it helps to explain things. And I try to be, you know, you try to communicate, you know, these concepts. These are not always easy sometimes, you know, assets, liabilities and things, you know. So, but the Trilateral Commission, you know, Pat Wood, he's a good friend of mine for 30 years. And he's pretty much the recognized authority on the Trilateral Commission. So, that's kind of how we met when we started doing research together. I've been at this 35 years, and you know, he wrote his latest book, Technocracy Rising, which ties in the Trilateral Commission. We'll take a look at that. But Barry Goldwater was quite a critic of the Trilateral Commission, and he had this quote right here. He said that the Trilateral Commission is intended to be the vehicle for multinational consolidation of the commercial and banking interests by seizing interest or seizing control of the political government of the United States, and so on. And he said that they will rule the future. So that's, you know, taking control of the government. I mean, you know, we have a disproportionate amount of the membership of the trilaterals in the U.S. government ever since the days of Jimmy Carter. Practically his entire administration, you know, was in there, including Brzezinski and so on. And Ron Kirby's been a guest on your show. He's talked about trading blocks and others, but the Trilateral Commission thinks of itself as a think tank, you know, to bring together members from the private sector in North America, Europe, and Asia. And the real goal is really corporate fascism, you know, a monopoly through regional trading blocks, as you can see in this illustration here on three continents. And in 1992... the Trilateral issued a study paper entitled Regionalism in a Converging World, which stated that regional arrangements provide models or building blocks for increased or strengthened globalism. And that's really what is at issue here, is the idea of globalization of corporations and wages you know, the world's getting smaller, you know, and they want to help do that. In fact, Brzezinski, he said, we can't leap into world government in one quick step. He said the precondition for globalization is progressive regionalization. And it's a term that he always uses in my book. He said that 20 years ago, by the way. So several studies have been done on this. This first book you can see here is from the Peterson Institute of International Economics. Now, he was the former chairman of the CFR. And, you know, we hear a lot about the Council on Foreign Relations, but it's really the Trilateral Commission that's the real task force, the task force for globalism. And that's how Pat describes it, you know, for world governments. And now they're operating more like a shadow government, as we can see in this slide here. We're seeing it right now with the TPP and the TTIP trade agreements. That's Trans-Pacific and Trans-Continental or International. I forgot what it stood for. Trade and Partnership Agreement with Transatlantic with Europe. But, you know, this isn't Obama trade. That's what some people are calling this, Obama trade, like he came up with it, you know, like Obamacare or something. I mean, you know, the TPP was launched in 2005 while Obama was still in Chicago rolling joints or something, you know. I mean, the Trilateral Commission, it's an initiative. It was headed up by Michael Froman. He's of course, the U.S. trade rep, and he's Trilateral Commission. He's CFR, and he's also Citigroup. And the trade reps are always trilateral commission guys. You know, 70-80% of the time, that's the case. So they want to deal with what they're calling regulatory harmonization with these Asian countries and so on, and using the WTO, the trade organization, as an enforcement model for compliance and so on. But, you know, all this is being done secret. You know, you've been talking about it, and they want to ram this through Congress, you know. And Constitution right here says Article 1, Section 8 says the Constitution grants powers to regulate commerce with foreign nations to the legislative branch and not to the executive branch with all their cronies, CFRs and establishment cronies. It should be done through the legislature, but they've been kept in the dark. They can't even look at this agreement and so on. So these are the same people that gave us the CAFTA and NAFTA agreements, you know, trade agreements here in the U.S. Some parts of this have leaked out, and it's not just a trade deal or harmonization of intellectual property and so on. They're talking about U.N. Millennium Development Goals, climate change, sustainable development, things like that in these agreements. So it's really, again, it's an effort about globalization, especially the wages of jobs. As you can see here in this slide, this really is about outsourcing jobs around the world, cheap labor. It's the globalization of wages, creating a feudalist class, you know, and really here's your income inequality. And by the way, a Princeton study was done, and they said 50 million of these jobs are not ever coming back. I mean, they've been outsourced. And I don't, you know, Donald Trump just doesn't get it. I think he had a call from Bill Clinton over the weekend or this week. And so maybe Bill's telling him, hey, you know, this is the plan, you know. And he doesn't see the bigger picture.
He'll be washed out his ear with Lysol. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, Trump thinks he's going to bring these jobs back. I'm not sure how you really do that. Corporations have been, they've moved their entire manufacturing platforms over there. So. And it's a very strange partisan support in Congress right now with these trade deals, John. You know, you have Republicans siding with Obama, and you got Democrats typically supporting the unions and labor. And the GOP is aligned with their corporate donors, you know. And we're even cheering for Nancy Pelosi to stand up for the American people. I mean, no wonder they call it the District of Criminals. You know, I think they should wear NASCAR jackets where they have their sponsorships on, you know. At the UN, Goldman Sachs, and ADM.
Yeah, you know, it's across the front page of the big banner headline on Drudge Report right now.
What is it?
Can you get it so we can show the people? It says Republican Civil War. Oh. Bush says Trump, buffoon, a clown, an a-hole, and they spelled it out. Now that's class.
That's classy
stuff, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, Jeb, I've got an idea. Permanently, you and your whole crew.
Haven't we seen enough? Yeah.
I mean, seriously, from that ridiculous George H.W. Bush to George W. Bush, that the son who like seemed to be developing dementia as his term got longer, and then all of a sudden when he was out, magically his brain seemed to come back and he could articulate a sentence, you know, get all the words in the right order and so forth. I mean, seriously, what does it say about our country?
Yeah.
To even have a headline like this?
You know, Carol Quigley, he wrote Tragedy and Hope. He said, the only hope for the world was world government. And the tragedy is that people won't accept it. And he said that both political parties should be nearly identical so that they have the same policy agendas. See, I mean, that's why I'm a political atheist. And Goldman Sachs is the number one donor for both Hillary and Jeb Bush. They have already made their choices. See, in Europe, they don't have elections. They have selections. That's pretty much how we do things here. And these are the elitists, you know. I mean, these are the groups we're talking about here, the establishment. You know, the ultimate goal of the ruling elite really is to have free trade areas or unions around the world. As you can see in this slide right here, 111, similar to the European Union. We don't hear much about the North American Union right now, but it's still a long-term goal. And the I-35 corridor runs through Texas. Where is that in Texas?
Right over there.
Is it near you in Dallas?
Oh, yeah.
Is it? Okay.
Comes right up there.
Right up the street. Oh, okay. Well, Mexican membership's now been included in the Trilateral Commission, Mexican members, and they're now referred to as the Pacific Asian Group over in Asia, or the Union. So as you can see it there. And, you know, the North American Union is part of a larger agenda to include the Free Trade Area of the Americas, if you can see that. The Free Trade Area of the Americas was launched in 1994. And, by the way, that was the same year as NAFTA and the World Trade Organization. There was no accident there, really. This was through the Summit of the Americas, which is a front organization of David Rockefeller. This envisioned a 35-nation trading bloc here in the in this hemisphere, you know, pretty much like Europe. And Bill Clinton was there with his trilateral and CFR cronies and at the signing. And this is why Kissinger said that the NAFTA treaty was not a conventional trade agreement. He said it was the architecture for a new international system. Well, again, the TC uses the term new international economic order. So that's really what he was saying there. And that was in the LA Times, 1993. But the EU is well established. And Japan is a prospective member of the Chinese CAFTA trade area over there. In fact, Japan might necessarily have to join that trading bloc because of the when their bond market finally blows up. And, you know, they can't keep that going forever. So, you know, the end game is really, as I see it, is to use the SDR as a new settlement currency in a world ruled by these fascists and technocrats in a new world order. The new SDR would become effective next year, and that's just, they do this every 5 years, but it doesn't mean it's going to be something rolled out by next year. I don't see that. You know, it's planned right now, but I think it's going to be implemented, as that author said, on the back of a crisis. We got to have a crisis is coming. You know, when you have the BIS say a crisis is coming, they see it coming, and they're going to exploit it. They do this every time, whether it's the UN or FDR or anything else. They'll always use a crisis for this and be a new political paradigm. I like that word. But the elitists want to destroy national sovereignty and all this, and this is best summed up by Arnold Toynbee. He was a historian for the Royal Institute of International Affairs, which, by the way, was the branch office was in New York, and it was later called the CFR. So he was a socialist. He said, "I'll merely repeat that we are at present working," he said, "discreetly, but with all of our might, to wrest this mysterious political force called sovereignty out of the clutches of the local states of the world. And all the time, we are denying with our lips what we're doing with our hands." I mean, that, you know, John, that right there just tells you nothing has changed since 1931. That's when he made that quote, you know.
Yeah.
And so right now we have the European Union, if you can see that. They have, of course, 28 members. And they are, by the way, they're the largest economy in the world. They have a GDP of about $18.5 trillion. The U.S. is 17.4, I think. And this is double the Chinese economy. You know, they account for 25% of the global GDP, this trading bloc in Europe. I mean, their largest trading partner, again, is China, and then it would be Russia. So they're closely aligned with Russia. In fact, Russia has, I guess, 46% of their currency reserves are in the euro, you know, rejecting the dollar. I mean, that's pretty significant, because the euro is used right now probably about 25% of reserves around the world. But Europe has no trade deficit, unlike the U.S. I just read on Drudge where we had this is the worst trade deficit in 6 months right now. So we keep running this deficit. Europe really doesn't have that. They somehow have a real balance of trade over there. They've got, you know, some things going for them. I mean, they have some structural problems, but they have half of all the bank assets in the world. They have 40% of the wealth, 35% of the corporations and brands are over there. So, I mean, Europe is, you know, it's always asked, you know, people say, what's the biggest economy in the world? And people, you know, would say China. Well, China might be the fastest growing, but it's certainly not the largest. The problem in the EU is the Eurozone, is the debt they have in the Eurozone. You can see that here in this slide. This includes, of course, the PIGS countries we're talking about, Italy, Portugal, Ireland, Greece, of course. The debt to GDP in the EU right now is about 93%, according to Eurostat. The collective debt in the Eurozone is about $11 trillion, and that's about 60% of their EU debt. So some people say the EU, you know, is in worse shape than the U.S., and it looks very dysfunctional, which it is. But I disagree with that. You know, according to the CIA fact book, the U.S. has a debt to GDP of 74%. Nobody believes that. And this excludes the intergovernment debt that we talked about, the $5.2 trillion. That makes it over 100%. That doesn't even account for the GSE, the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and certainly not for the unfunded liability. So we're whistling past the grave. We're fooling ourselves that that our debt to GDP is that low. So, you know, the entitlements in Greece right now is about 18% of their GDP. That's the highest, you know, over there. But it was just released that the U.S. is 20% of entitlements here in the U.S. It's probably even greater. You know, Greenspan just warned that this was extremely dangerous. A central banker warning us, you know. So, I mean, the U.S. state budgets right now, including Florida and, of course, California, Illinois, is about ready to go broke, I think, up there. They're almost $5 trillion in the red. You know, that's California, I think, accounts for $700 billion alone in their pensions, underfunded pensions. They're not getting the yields they thought they would get. And, you know, the real issue in Europe, I mean, we're in worse shape down the state level than the Eurozone. The real issue in the Eurozone is they need a fiscal union. You can see in this little cartoon, I guess, 116, there's Angela. I mean, there's never been a monetary union without a fiscal union in history. You know, others have mentioned this. You know, one size doesn't fit all. The Lisbon Treaty was passed in 2009. It's silent on exiting the Eurozone, if any member nation can do that. But the treaty does allow that a member state can withdraw from the union. That's Article 50. And then, of course, they could rejoin Article 49. But, you know, could Greece do that? Sure. I mean, that would be their decision. You know, Germany right now, they have a council over there, and they've recommended withdrawal of Europe or of Greece. And, you know, we'll see about that. But they issued a paper in June, and I found this through a link to a link, but we don't get a lot of news out of Europe, you know, here in the U.S., but they just had a study done there. It was the Five Presidents Report of the ECB and the Eurogroup and the Commission. They want a creation of an EU fiscal board to strengthen the Eurogroup, and this is the 19 members of the Eurozone right now. And they're going to present a white paper in 2017. What this is going to do is they're pushing for even appointing a minister, a prime minister of the Eurogroup. It's almost like creating two zones over there, you know. But they really need to be fiscally integrated, and the central bank's not doing that for the entire union over there. In fact, Alan Greenspan, he made this comment, as you can see it here, on a BBC interview, can't read it, but he said, the problem is that there is no way I can conceive of the euro continuing. He said, all the members of the eurozone, unless they become politically integrated, not just fiscally integrated, won't do it. He said, short of a political union, I find it difficult to see them holding together in the current form. It probably could get a union of Germany, Austria, Luxembourg, Netherlands, and Finland, for example, but not South Europe. And I thought that last comment was very revealing. That's kind of a reference to the PIG countries. But what's being suggested here, John, is something like a Nordic Euro. I've heard that term. That doesn't include South Europe, the Southern Europe, two zones. I think Harry Dent's even mentioned it. And political movements in France and Italy right now, left-wing movements, they want to withdraw. They're talking. They got a movement over there because they don't want austerity. They don't want to be treated like Greece. You know, they're talking about withdrawing. So there's going to be a realignment over there. I can just see it coming. This is a theme in my book. And Mario Draghi, in fact, just called. He stated that the Eurogroup needs a shared treasury over there. Shared treasury. The ultimate solution would be to have ECB issuing Eurobonds, much like the IMF issues SDRs today. And Jim Rickards put it this way, if you can see that slide. The books featured there are all dealing with fiscal union in Europe, which they need. He said the EU is already the largest economic power in the world. It's destined to evolve into the world's economic superpower. The Eurobonds will provide a deep liquid pool of investable assets larger than the U.S. Treasury, if needed, the euro can be supported by its members' combined gold holding, which exceeds 10,000 tons. We don't know how much China has, but we do know how much Europe has, and the Europe has the gold to protect their currency. Look at this next slide. Here's what Rickards is talking about. The U.S., you know, allegedly has 8,100 tons of gold, but the Eurozone has almost 11,000 tons over there. So, you know, the EU has more gold per GDP than the U.S. and probably four times China, what they're saying right now. But, you know, Rickards sees a day when he said the architects of the euro knew they needed a fiscal union, so he said they were just going to launch it in anticipation of a crisis to later force the issue. And, you know, that time seems to be upon us right now. I mean, the bottom line, as I see it, is the EU has some structural problems, but they can fix that. The U.S. has problems that cannot be. And that's why I say we're going to see the ascendancy of the EU and the decline of the U.S. as seen in that slide there. And I think this is really a prophetic issue, John.
Well, I don't know, man. I'm as you're speaking, these various things are coming to my attention that are kind of on the periphery. But now let me ask you. Let me just make a. I'll tell you what I'm talking about here. For example, is it true that more businesses? I don't mean big corporate businesses, but more businesses run by, you know, individuals or small groups. I don't mean like small businesses of like, what, 500 employees or less. That's a small business. Well, that's not where I come from. 500 employees, that's a big business. Understand, more of them are cratering than are being created.
Here in the U.S.?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, small businesses being crushed back there. They're paralyzed. You know, they don't know what the government's going to do next. You know, what's going to happen in the economy, and they're afraid to hire. And Obamacare is imposing regulations. And you know, fascism is when the government doesn't own the means of production, the private sector; it just controls it. And that's anymore in the U.S. We have more of a fascist model. You know, where we're trying to centrally plan the economy and control everything in the economy. And so business has been really hurt. Yeah. And I mean, this isn't a U.S. problem. I mean, this is everywhere too, you know. And, you know, Europe's got, again, its problems, but I see a day when a crisis is going to come, a really big one over there, and it's going to resolve their problems over there. I think they've got it all kind of figured out. So this fits into what I call Eurozone eschatology. You know, my degree's in theology. And I like to refer to the events going on over there as an eschatological event. I mean, that's a study of prophetic issues in the last days. And I see the rise of the EU fitting into a prophetic matrix described in the Old Testament, especially in the book of Daniel. We've talked about this before, but, you know, this is the major theme in my book. You got to see this. I mean, you know, in Daniel chapter 2, a prophecy was made regarding the Gentile kingdoms in world history. You can see that slide there. Slide 121. This was based on a dream that the king of Babylon had about 6th century BC. And young Daniel was asked to interpret the dream. He's a young man brought over from exile. And the king had a dream. Well, the king saw a great statue with a head of gold, silver arms, bronze thighs, iron legs, and feet of iron and clay. And you notice that the metals become more base in that statue there. But, God revealed the dream to Daniel as follows. He said the head of gold was Babylon, 600 BC. The successive kingdoms are identified in history now as Medo-Persia in 539 BC. That happened. A little later, Greece is the bronze thighs. And then Rome is the iron legs in 168 BC. So, you know, incidentally, Greece is mentioned by name in Daniel 8:21. That was 3 centuries before Alexander the Great. And when Alexander the Great came into Israel, the Jewish elders showed him that scripture. He was so impressed that he exempted them from tribute, and he went on to defeat the Medo-Persians in 332. So, I mean, here he just showed him right there, you know. So I mean, that's no other book in the world has prophecy like this. And the 10 toes of iron and clay are really called Rome II in this illustration. And the two legs are coming down. This historically are the two divided Roman Empire after the fall of Rome in 476, and the Western Holy Roman Empire, and then the Eastern Byzantine Greek Orthodox, which fell to Constantinople. But here's where it gets really interesting in this chart or this image here. Look at that. can't read the print there, but the final 10 toes indicate the rise of Europe. It's an extension of the old Roman Empire. So historically, we had these kingdoms come and go, and out of Europe at the end is going to come out that some of the nations there will be strong as iron and weak as clay. Says, but they'll combine in the seed of men, Daniel 2:40. So, 41. I think this represents the final 10 nations that we could see at some point comprising a new fiscal union to support the euro, an inner core, they're calling it, at the ECB in Frankfurt, Germany. This, again, just seems to be the trajectory and historically would be supported here by this prophecy. I just find it fascinating, you know, that you see that. In fact, the euro could probably, you know, rise in stature against be included more in the SDR and things like that. So Jacques Delors used to be the commission president over there in 5 years ago. He said a crisis in the Eurozone, he said, would be a beneficial crisis that would help to break down resistance to a fiscal union and to accumulate fresh power. He said that in the UK Telegraph in November 2010. So, I mean, that's literally happening. It's unfolding before our eyes, you know. And that movement began over there in Europe in 1948. That was the same year that Israel, you know, became a nation. So these are just things we're observing right now. In fact, I don't know if it means anything, but from 1948 to 2018, it's 70 years. And Jonathan Kahn, I think, has been on your program. He's talked about Jubilee years and things like that. So oh, yeah. It's kind of interesting, you know, how that ties in. But Isaac Newton was a theologian, actually. He said, about the time of the end, a body of men will be raised up who will turn their attention to the prophecies and insist on their literal interpretation and amidst much clamor. But this is what we're observing right now. This prophecy, Daniel 2, is just really one of the most important in the Old Testament. The sweep of world power, shall we say. The EU is even called the new Tower of Babel, as you can see in this slide here. That is the Parliament building, if you can see it. They've said where they failed to complete 4,000 years ago, we in Europe will finish now. In other words, we're going to help rebuild the Tower of Babel. They actually designed the Parliament building in Strasbourg to resemble the painting by Peter Bruegel in 1563, as seen here. And, you know, some members, again, will be strong, some will be weak, but there's going to be this combination, the seed of men. So it's just fascinating stuff. Here's a look inside the Parliament building, 124. That is someday in that body in Strasbourg, France. Someday a great leader is going to come out of this body of politicians. And again, their process over there, they select their leaders pretty much. They don't have a very democratic process. I don't think we do either, but... And someday a leader is going to come out of there, and the Bible identifies as the Antichrist, a person of such influence that he's like a messiah. You know, everybody's taken away. And Tony Blair is a former UK prime minister. If you can see this here, he had a quote where he said, in a world in which China's going to become the dominant power of the 21st century in many ways, he said it's sensible for Europe to use its collective weight in order to achieve influence. So they really need to, they're really on the world stage, largest economy in the world. Once they get a fiscal union, think of it, if they had ECB issuing euro bonds, collective bonds, they could write their debts down, they could recapitalize. I mean, there's a lot of counterparty risk over there, but and especially even back to the U.S., but I'd see a day when this could be really straightened out. Tony Blair just wrote this article in Newsweek magazine. He said democracy isn't working, and he admired what Putin is doing in Russia. In fact, Putin, I think, has a 90% approval rating. Is that right?
Of his own people?
Of his own people, yeah, all around the
89,
world.
89.
89.
That's the number I saw.
That's pretty good. 17% debt to GDP, 90% approval rating. I can't beat it. And Tony Blair said, suddenly Putinism, he said, the cult of a strong leader who goes in the direction he pleases, seemingly contemptuous of opposition, has its appeal, said Blair. I mean, so the cult of the strong leader, I mean, that's, I guess that's what people admire. And in 2009, the Lisbon Treaty created the office of the President of the European Council. And they have a term of 2.5-year term over there. So the current term will expire in early 2017. And when I saw that white paper being issued in 2017 early on, I thought, boy, that's kind of interesting timing there. But, you know, the Bible predicts someday in the next slide here, says a king will arise, a leader. He'll be insolent and skilled in intrigue. His power will be mighty, but not by his own power. And he'll even oppose the prince of princes. We know who that is. And he won't win that battle. But, you know, Alex Merck said all the Eurozone needs is a great communicator just to bring the parties together. He's a currency fund manager, and he used to be in Europe. And he's right on. In fact, he's pretty bullish on the euro, as a matter of fact. So the other scripture there is Revelation 17:10. It says the kings, these kings, or 10 kings, receive authority as kings with the Antichrist for 1 hour. And so there's going to be this kind of support behind these nations, behind this world leader and over there. So we also read that God has put it in their hearts to execute his purposes, to have a common purpose until the words of God should be fulfilled. That's in the same passage there. And I just love that because it really talks about God's sovereignty, that, you know, he's in control. And of course, our Lord is the Prince of Princes. And someday, you know, we're in a struggle between good and evil. But good, you know, good's going to triumph over evil. And I guess that's the good news. That is the good news. That's what we have to remind ourselves. And the Bible says also that the Antichrist will enforce a cashless society, as we mentioned. And this fits into the goals of technocracy right here, slide 127. There's our friend, Pat Wood. Pat shared in episode 250, if your listeners are out there, if you've not heard that interview from his book, Technocracy Rising, you really need to listen to that. I think it's up to 60,000 views on YouTube right now. But this technocracy, it's a term, it means the skilled, the rule of the skilled, elitist view, you know, but it includes carbon credits, positive ID, sustainable development, you're always hearing that, the smart grid, deurbanization, transhumanism. Tom Horn's talked about this, Carl Tykrib, others. I think Steve Quayle's got a book on that subject. Catherine Albrecht, of course. What's her book, Spy Chips?
Yeah.
Yeah, and Catherine's talked about that in Revelation. He causes everybody to be given a mark, 666, to be used for rationing food and energy, to buy and sell. And this really ties in with the move towards that cashless society that Rogoff talked about. You know, it's all about control, John. I mean, I see Satan as a control freak. You know, he wants to control people. Where Jesus, he lets you accept him. You know, he lets you decide, you know. And, you know, that's the struggle we're against. There's a website I found in one of my newsletters I did. It's called betterthancash.org. Look that up. That is sponsored by Visa, MasterCard, the Bill Gates Foundation, Citigroup, the banksters, of course. Better than cash. They're saying, let's have an electronic system. Let's just get rid of cash, you know? What a great idea. So Pat's book mentions, of course, The Brave New World, 1984, George Orwell, and, of course, the Trilateral Commission and how this relates to technocracy, a rule of the skilled. Brzezinski talked about the need for that more controlled and directed society. And, you know, this has everything to do with Agenda 21. And the environment, you know, they rolled that out as a new enemy to unite us, you know, the environmental movement. Hitler said in 1933 in the New York Times, he said he was bringing prosperity to Germany through the proper application of technocracy. Well, we know pretty much how that turned out, little experiment over there. Pat Wood is got a good book there. People, I hope they check it out, but his website's what, technocracyrising.com, if you want to look at that. Pat explains the concept of energy credits, and I found this fascinating looking at his book. It's a modern technate in this slide you can see right here, and how these credits could be used or allocated for people to use energy. And it would expire each month, so you'd have to renew it and so on. And it would be like a credit card. This could be used as an energy credit card, as seen here. Notice the yin and yang symbol there. That's the official logo of technocracy going back to 1920, I think. And it stresses the need for equilibrium. Everything has to be in balance, you know, yin and yang. This form of ID, I think, could eventually, well, will eventually, something like it's going to be positive ID and used on people and that sort of thing. So, and this, again, ties into the technocracy smart grid. You can see there in that slide, Agenda 21. I mean, they're using this in a way right now in California, I think, with water meters. Have you noticed that?
Mm-hmm.
They're really, I mean, that's a, you talk about a humanitarian crisis. 40 million people are on my border here. And, you know, what are they going to do? I mean, Henry Kissinger once said you control nations with energy and people with food. Energy and food, right? Mm-hmm. And that seems to be, you know, where they want to control. It's Venezuela right now. I don't know if people know this. They're rationing food at the food stores and they're using fingerprint scanning on biometric technology. In other words, they're rationing the food based on your mark of your fingerprint.
You know, you mentioned this betterthancash.org thing. Do these people not check to see what they've put on their website? Now, it says, for governments, electronic payments advance financial inclusion and cost savings while giving governments a more efficient, transparent, and secure means of disbursing benefits such as salaries, pensions, and social welfare stipends. Oh, it gets better. Then, for the development community, and this is what the sentence actually says, or this is how it's written. When using cash, shifting humanitarian aid and emergency relief to electronic payments creates lasting benefits for people, communities, and economies, and is more transparent and efficient. It says, when using cash, shifting humanitarian aid and emergency relief to electronic payments, so where's the tie into when using cash? Idiots. There's more. For the private sector, the private sector can reduce many of the costs related to hard currency payments surrounding payroll and supplier payments while increasing transparency and efficiency. And from the press room, Grupo Bimbo joins the Better Than Cash Alliance to help small businesses in Mexico boost profits. Yes, Grupo Bimbo, world's largest baking company, joins the Better Than Cash Alliance. I'm thinking they're all a bunch of bloody bimbos.
Bimbos. Good for bimbo.
You know, I just want to see a bunch of these people just take swan dives off the 20th floor. I really do.
I know. You know,
with sacks over their heads, hopefully.
I believe it was in France that they first invented credit cards in 1973. Well, we know where that credit explosion has led. And so you have Visa. You'll always have Visa and MasterCard at the forefront of this issue, this agenda.
It's everywhere. We want to own.
They want to know. Well, it's even worse. Rogoff went on to say that way we can know what taxes and, you know, there's no financial privacy. You're trapped into the financial system. I mean, that's why you like gold and silver, because it has no counterparty risk and it's low profile and it's outside the system. And that's why the banksters hate it. John Maynard Keynes called it the barbaric relic, you know, gold. And that's pretty much how Wall Street sees it and the, you know, whatever. But, you know, we're in a changing world. And, you know, I think it's on all of our minds. What's going to happen in Europe? What's going to happen to America? I mean, in all this. So you ask about where is America? Look at this slide in all this. You know, put simply, you know, America's not seen in Bible prophecy. That's why I say we're going to see the ascendancy of Europe and the decline of the U.S. We were once a great nation. We used to honor the Lord, Psalm 33. I mean, but our culture has rejected the Judeo-Christian heritage. You know, we're just another collectivist pagan society. In fact, our decline should be seen more, I think, as a moral issue. James Madison here, in this quote he made, you probably can't read it, slide 131, he said, we've staked our future on our ability, our to follow the Ten Commandments with all of our heart. We've staked our future. Well, you know, George Washington said that morality and religion were indispensable supports to our republic. And John Adams went further. He put it this way. He said that we have no government armed with power capable of contending with human passions. Unbridled morality, or unbridled by morality and religion. He said greed, ambition, revenge would break the strongest cords of our Constitution as a whale goes through a net. He said our Constitution was made only for immoral and religious people. It's wholly inadequate for the government of any other kind. And that really is probably our, you know, problems in our country today. You know,
our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate for the government of any other. Wow,
that's a great
quote. Pretty clear, isn't it?
That's pretty clear. He said that in 1789, and you know, that's how far we've come as a nation. You know, if you're going to have a nation of laws, the rule of law, you've got to have people willing to obey the law. You know, you can't pass laws to make people moral and, you know, things. It's, you know, I mean, limited government depends on people self-policing or regulating themselves, you know, again, based on the Ten Commandments, which is, I guess, the Ten Suggestions today. But and there is a problem. You know, we've now become a collectivist welfare state. Look at this, slide 132, with 100 million people receiving federal welfare under Obama.
Hey, and these people, only a third of the population.
And these people vote, by the way. These people vote.
Oh, with or without ID.
Yeah.
You know, seriously, I have a question. Oh, this is probably going to sound terrible. But if somebody hadn't got enough sense to go and get themselves an identification card, why would we think they have enough sense to make a political decision of any kind?
Well,
but it's my right. It's like, what?
Well, look, I think it used to be just property owners, you know, could vote. But John Stuart Mill said it was axiomatic that those who receive benefits shouldn't be allowed to vote. Because, again, it's like feeding the bears, you know. I mean, you know,
oh, yeah, they're going to vote in whoever gives them the most stuff.
Aggressive. Yeah. I mean, this election cycle, I mean, you're gonna go out and have a conservative austerity message to people that are only voting for benefits from the government. I mean, that's John Adams, you know, said there's two ways to conquer and enslave a nation. He said one is by sword and the other is by debt. And this is all part of the Cloward-Piven strategy. This is Obama's voters, you know, seen in this slide right here by Columbia professors Richard Cloward and Francis Fox Piven, and in which it stated they're a political strategy to overload the American public welfare system to the point it creates a crisis and bankrupts the nation, leaving the country no choice but to adopt a socialist communist agenda. And Wayne Allen Root, he's been a guest on your show, but he used to be classmates, I guess, allegedly with Obama, who was there, because no one ever saw him, and I guess there's no record of it, David Horowitz said. I mean, so this is their agenda, and it came right out of Columbia University. That's where Brzezinski was at, and, you know, so on. Obama and his Alinsky progressives, they're exploiting moral hazard in the U.S. We're not that country we used to be, you know. We're not the country you and I remember or grew up in. A lot of listeners out there, a lot of us baby boomers, it's like going like a whale going through a net to control people. The German people, they voted for Hitler. They said, oh, he's our man, you know. People in Greece, they voted for the Syriza communists, you know. So this is what happens when demagogues come on the scene. But in fact, a Rasmussen poll was taken in March, and it said 31% want Obama to rule as a dictator. How do you like that idea? And that just shows the ignorance of people. You know, I had that in one of my newsletters. There's even a government website. It's called welcometousa.gov. Welcometousa.gov. You go on there, and it's all about how to get your benefits and get plugged in right away. It's telling the immigrants, you know, where to get the benefits. And, you know, I don't think Donald Trump understands this, you know, that they're using this, the NAFTA treaty. Look at this in this slide. This has paved the way for immigration and the NAFTA superhighway. That's the I-35. There's I-29, I guess, one, I-94. And it's called the NASCO Corridor. That's the North American Strategy for Competitiveness. Sounds so good, doesn't it?
Oh, it sounds great.
1994 they were established. So Rahm Emanuel, what do you say? You never what? You never want a good crisis to go to waste. And I think they're just waiting to exploit a financial crisis that they themselves have created. Collapse could be used, as you can see here, to create the North American Union. It's a Hegelian dialectic, you know, to create a predetermined outcome, a Hegelian dialectic, and perhaps even use an Amero currency that's been proposed here. Griffin's talked about that. These kind of progressive regionalization can only evolve, you know, into the free trade areas we see here. And don't think this can't happen. Obama just attended the 7th Summit of the Americas meeting in Panama in April of this year. So it's still part of a larger long-term goal that they have. But Kissinger said it was going to be an architecture for a new system. And, you know, they've even planned the Secretariat to be in Panama or Miami and so on. So this is pretty well down the road. I mean, they're planning this. And sadly, I think we're just heading for third world status in the U.S. We don't manufacture anything anymore. Bill Holder just said that. We've exported all these jobs, outsourced. They're just not coming back. So one of the greatest concerns I have, John, and we've talked about, is an emerging police state here in the U.S. In this slide. And that we see all around us, you know, it's the one thing that really keeps me awake at night, because Reagan said that government increases, you know, liberty decreases. It just happens every time. And Ron Paul's been trying to warn us for years, you know, we see the degradation of our civil liberties. There are people in this country who are setting this up, and they're actually traitors. I mean, you know, Cicero once said, a nation can survive its fools and ambitious, but it can't survive treason from within. And they're trying to restructure this. John Whitehead's been on the show, and he's written these couple books here. These are important books. The first one was A Government of Wolves, and the other one is recently Battlefield America. That's in your CTM library, I think, right?
Oh, yes.
And he's a good man, a Christian lawyer. Edmund Murrow said, a nation of sheep will be governed by a government of wolves. So that's where he came up with that. But this recent book is subtitled The War on the American People. I mean, who can doubt this? I mean, we're seeing more aggression. You know, government is only force. That's what George Washington said. You know, it's not reason or eloquence. Government is just force, just a group of men and women, you know, that impose their will. John Whitehead, he mentions how law enforcement today rules under qualified immunity. Did you remember that?
Oh, yes.
What is that? I mean, that is just, where's the rule of law?
They make it up as they go along. I mean, talking with Bill yesterday, he was talking about all these, for every actual ounce of gold that there are like 125 gold certificates that frankly aren't worth the paper that they're printed on. But anyway, I digress. And I said, how is such a thing even legal? And he said, because it is. So they just make up the rules as they go along.
I was a student of Francis Schaeffer back in the 80s. I think he passed away in 84 when I was in Bible college. And he wrote the Christian Manifesto that the courts were going to become so rogue that they were going to start oppressing everybody. The courts. The Constitution here, this little tiny six articles, it was written to protect life, liberty, and property. Those things. And those things are not being... Harmon Taylor was one of a great guests you had on, I think, talking about that. That's episode 224. And he talked about the degradation of that, the rule of law. So this attack on the Bill of Rights, it can be traced back to 9/11, as seen here, the 9/11, you know, event in which they passed the Patriot Act in the almost immediately within 40 days.
What a joke! The Patriot Act.
I wish I can't even remember what it stands for, but it's just a terrible acronym. Whoever bureaucrat it comes up with these acronyms is just horrible. The Freedom Act, the freedom for the NSA reform is called the USA Freedom Act. You know, the government said it was absolutely necessary that we have to have the Patriot Act. It was necessary. William Pitt said, necessity is the argument of tyrants and the creed of slaves. You know, we've given up, we've yielded too much too easily to this. Immediately after 9/11, they rushed the USA Patriot Act, and a year later, they created the DHS, as seen here, little chart I made. They came up with the DHS with a huge budget, U.S. Northcom in Colorado, and the NCTC in 2004. General Clapper is the heads that up, who lied under oath. General yeah. Flapper, General Whopper. We'll call him General Whopper. Edward Snowden, he exposed the NSA, and this would never come about by the Senate Intelligence Committee. Dianne Feinstein's the oldest member of the Senate, 82 years old, can't get rid of her, and they never would have overseen this. You know, it took a young guy, 29-year-old guy, to risk his life and be chased out of the country. Edward Snowden, I think from a libertarian point of view, he's just a hero for what he's what he was exposing. In fact, he said he didn't want to live in a country like this with surveillance. We're now living in a surveillance state, as you can see this next slide, 142, over our phone calls, emails, Facebook. I mean, the main headquarters for this is in Bluffdale, Utah. And Mr. Ghost, if you can see that, this is the NSA Data Spy Center. It's 100,000 square feet. It cost almost $2 billion. They got the Cray supercomputers there, the XC30s. They troll through 100,000 trillion petaflops per second. That's a lot of data. This is, look at that. That's being built in Utah right now, 50 miles south of Salt Lake by DARPA, and they created this. So, you know, it went live August 31st of last year. So there should be protest. Out there all the time. Forget, you know, people protest a lion got shot, you know, but here we have the crown jewel of a police state. So, you know, the budget for the DHS right now is about $60 billion, and we can safely say that it seems like the DHS is against the American people. Look at this slide here, 144. Notice it's all pointed back at us. In other words, the focus is turning on domestic terrorism and calling people like the Bundy Ranch, you know, terrorists. And, you know, have we forgotten Eisenhower when he said in 1961, we needed to be on guard against the military-industrial complex, the acquisition of power, he said, influence. He said the potential for disastrous rise of misplaced power exists. He said this in 1961, and he had a concern that our defense contractors and so on would become the biggest in the world, and lo and behold, that's what we see. And it's really important that in that same speech, he said later, he said we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific technological elite. That's the technological, that's technocracy, you know, the scientific dictatorship.
Indeed. I think
that's what Pat calls it, you know, and you know, the neocons are blinding us to this danger, you know. They keep calling to, we need more military and, you know, everything. And it's a dangerous thing to have too much government. I mean you reach a tipping point. You know, the government sees us right now as 10 federal regions. Look at this in this slide. They see us as 10 federal regions, not 50 states. This was based on an executive order by Nixon back 73, I think. Executive Order 11-647. This is how FEMA sees you, IRS, Department of the EPA, OSHA, and they even have 10 councils of governors right now. They passed that in 2009 over these same areas. Incidentally, I think you're in region, what, 9-6? And that's you and me there, John.
Yeah.
And now they've come up, of course, with Jade Helm 15, which is, of course, a military exercise. You can see that next slide there. This is the chart that everybody's seeing, and you'll notice, well, of course, Texas is in there, and Arizona, the Arizona High Country. I mean, they've made a little dot there, and we're keeping our eyes open for this, but I'm, like you say, I'm not hearing much about this, what's going on right now with the Jade Helm. Here is their logo, Mr. Ghost, Master of the Human Domain. What does that mean, John? I mean, I don't know.
Well, I think we know what it means. Look at the little ghost, the little ghosty wooden shoe there in the middle. The little ghost shoe.
Did you see that?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what that is? Do you know what some people said that is?
They say it's a concentration camp shoe.
They issued those in the German concentration camps, wooden shoes. I mean, that's...
And other people say it's sabotage. It's a symbol of sabotage, right?
Well, JD has been on your show. She's covered some great information on that. And I don't know if it's time to a dollar collapse. It seems premature. I mean, Doug Hageman, he says, thinks it's probably for future control, population control, and travel restrictions, I suppose. I mean, why would they be doing this? They're supposed to be training for hostile, activity. You know, my fear is it's training for a future, something like a gun confiscation. Here in this slide, you can see, they're always trying to exploit a gun shooting. Always. Look at that. You see that? The Sandy Hook thing
in
there?
I think that what I hope for and what I believe will happen is that these idiots can do whatever they want. But if they go too far, there won't be any place on this earth where they can hide. And many of them will probably be dragged out of their offices. It only has to get bad enough for the citizens to just go, that's it. This is now over with. But the biggest problem is that I think that they want us to turn on each other.
Would you say that Wolfgang is focusing on this because you can just tell by Obama's demeanor that him and Eric Holder, they really wanted this thing to lead to gun control and so on and more of it. I mean, we don't need more laws. I mean, look at this poster, all in favor of gun control. Raise your right hand,
Right.
Charlton Heston, look at the next one here. Moses, he says guns don't kill people. Gun control kills people. Just look at the people in Chicago. Look at Australia where they had gun control and crime and home invasions went up like crazy, These gun-free zones, I guess that's what they call them. And when you say that, that just tells the killer, hey, you can go in here and do this, I mean, the only way, how's the NRA put it? The only way to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun, right?
Pretty much.
Amen. I mean, the MIAC report, I want to note this. This came out in 2009, and it's a kind of personal because they smeared Ron Paul and Bob Barr and, of course, Chuck Baldwin. Now, he wrote the foreword to my book, Dr. Baldwin, and that's the Missouri Information Analysis Center. It's a DHS fusion center, and they later apologized to Ron Paul and everybody, but, big deal. I mean, we know what they're after, and, Article 1, Section 9.3, if you want to get your Constitution, it says, no bill of attainder shall be passed. That's kind of an old term, but it means taintedness. It means to smear somebody as they're guilty without a trial. In other words, that's what all our founding fathers were being smeared as terrorists or whatever. And, similar to the Sedition Act of 1918. This is what they're trying to get Snowden with, I think, whether you couldn't even write, print, or publish anything against your government. It's kind of getting that way. I mean, someone said that dissent is the truest form of patriotism, and we just, they're trying to shut that down. Last year, the Supreme Court Justice Antonio Scalia, he issued a warning to a college audience in February of last year in Hawaii. He was talking about Japanese internment. And look at this slide here. He said that, you're kidding yourself if you think the same thing can't happen again. He said in times of war, Scalia said, citing a Latin expression attributed to Cicero, the laws fall silent. I mean, are we at war? Are we at odds? I mean...
We're not at war yet, but we probably will be. All that has to happen is for things to get just a little bit worse. A financial collapse could do it. If the groceries dry up at the on the store shelves, they're just not there anymore. They've all been bought, and then the stuff stops moving. Could cause some unrest. I mean, you got Farrakhan saying, "I need 10,000 men. Death is sweeter than living under tyranny." It's like, where have you been, you burnt out old fossil? Your people are the ones that are killing each other. It's not gangs of Caucasians out there mowing them down. You're mowing each other down. What are you talking about? And yet, this fool gets airplay and he gets, we should listen to, I just believe in the integrity of, of Farrakhan and of Obama and of Jackson and of Sharpton and all these other losers. And they're only headed one direction. They're losers. They know it. And the only way that they can ever not be losers is if there is no competition whatsoever, ever. And then when there is no competition, what do? They fall on each other. And it's no different here than it is on the great big continent to the east. And that's the plain truth of it. And as soon as people stop being squeamish and just call it the way it is, the closer we'll be to some sort of a solution. I mean, it's like, oh, Obama just thinks it's just terrible that you can't have illiterate people that can't spell cat, no identification. Mm-hmm. Oh, let them vote. Let them vote. Yeah. And, oh, they think it's terrible that we want to turn this ridiculous wave of immigration back, because I think Mexico is doing the same thing to this country that Castro did to us when he opened his prisons and let all the boat people come from Cuba and flood into Florida. Mm-hmm. I think Mexico is getting rid of their unskilled labor and basically their non-hackers, and they're dumping them on the U.S. We've got 25% of their whole population here. I mean, what nation on earth puts up with this? Yeah. Oh, that's right. Italy, England, France, and Germany, just for starters. Where are they all coming from? The same place. Africa. So, I mean, when is everybody going to wake up to what's going on here? And then you got the other Caucasians that are going, now here's a crisis in the making. And as you say, Chuck, we don't want to let this crisis go to waste. So let's see, what can we do? I know. The people will turn on each other. And then they'll be disorganized, and there will be fewer of them, and it'll be easier for us to like put the iron boot down right on their necks, and we'll have control of everything, and we don't even have to be productive. We could just seize assets and bank accounts and everything else. We'll be fine. This is how these pukes think, people. They really do. We want to believe that, say, dress nice suit, good education, Ivy League diploma, the whole shooting match. These people aren't worth hanging. They're not. And rope is reusable. And it's the plain truth of it. Just because somebody ascends to a position of authority or influence somewhere does not make them intelligent. Witness the condition of the world. Anybody want to argue with that out there? With our best and brightest are getting slaughtered out on the battlefield. Our best and brightest are not in government.
No, those are all lawyers and community organizers, not statesmen. What someone said, a politician... The difference between a politician and a statesman is a politician looks out for the next election and the statesman looks out for the next generation.
Yeah.
And we just don't have that. You know, we have a multicultural society and we have culture wars where they're inciting the politics of greed and envy and race. And this is all part of Alinsky said, Saul Alinsky said, keep the masses stirred up, you know, keep them stirred up. And it's almost like the Hunger Games in a... You know, what we're seeing here, I mean, the NDAA provides now for an indefinite detention of those who are dissenters, the domestic terrorists, you know, and that's a very broad term, by the way. That's a big brush that they're painting people with, and that's what I hate. They call your state, Texas, a hostile territory. Did you hear that?
Oh, yeah.
For Jade Helm? I mean, you're hostile here. Yeah, you kind of opposed to tyranny and oppression and, you know, things. They're proposing FEMA camps in the U.S. Look at this map right here. This is from Dave Hodges. Has he been on your program?
No, I was on his.
You were on his, that's right. And, boy, Dave's really sticking his neck out talking about this stuff. You know, just a couple weeks ago, General Wesley Clark, did you hear this on MSNBC, major broadcast? He's CFR. He works with George Soros and so on. He said we should have. He said we should have detention centers for those disloyal to America, for those who don't appreciate the blessings of America. You know, as domestic terrorists, General Clark. I mean, your own representative, Michael McCall, down there. He's introduced a bill now. We need a new office at the DHS, the Office of Countering Violent Extremism. Excuse me, don't we already have the NCTC and 22 intelligence agencies and the NSA? My goodness, stop this. And he's a Republican. He's a neocon. I mean, Goldwater said extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. Got to love old Barry, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And here, here's who they're talking about right here in the slide 154. There's the Hunger Games. There you are, people. You know, so, you know, I thought the other day, I was thinking to myself about this. You know what it is, John? I put it this way. We know that they know that we know what they know. Is that good?
Yeah, but the only thing that they don't know is how much we care about what we know, which is the only thing that they care about.
Well, but they want to know everything about us.
Oh, sure. In that way, they'll figure out how much we care about what we know. And by the way, let me just correct something here. I thought you meant like recently. Yeah, Dave Hodges has been on this program before, but that was like last year. So, and I was on his program recently. So for anybody going, are you an idiot? He's been on your show. It's like, I know he's been on the show, but I was thinking within the fairly recently, the contemporary times here.
Uh-huh.
Oh, there we go.
Hey, well, hey, John, I want to finish with some contingency planning and just, some.
Maybe a bright spot? Is there a bright spot somewhere? If you got a bright spot, we'll take it.
Well, yeah, there's hope. There's light at the end of the tunnel, and it really is. It's not a train. We can hope for better. There is a need for contingency planning. We see all this coming. As you can see here, Patrick Henry said, for my part, whatever anguish of spirit it might cost, I'm willing to know the whole truth, to know the worst, and to provide for it. So, we gotta be realistic. We gotta know what's going on. Something worse than 2008 is coming, and our own government's getting prepared. We gotta get prepared. I talk about the 4 G's in my lectures. Here it is, John. So you can get it straight. It's God, guns, gold, and groceries. You got that?
Okay.
All right.
Yes.
So. People today they're trapped in the normalcy bias. If you can see that slide there, and they hope that things will work out. We need to break out of the matrix and take the red pill. By the way, I'm glad you're using the matrix imagery there on your program. The intro, it really looks good improvement there. I'm glad to see you using that. But I always say an optimist is one who doesn't know all the facts. We need to be. Get our facts together, and we need to exercise our Second Amendment rights, obviously, as you can see here, and be prepared like Moses. Moses is showing us here.
Yes.
There he is. He's got the tablet with him. Hey, and so they say guns only have two enemies, rust and politicians. And, here's a slide on preparedness. Show that one, Mr. Ghost. I thought you'd like that one, John. So there you can.
Yeah, that's kind of good. Got a few shooting irons there and just, stacks and stacks of gold bullion. Yeah. Or are those loaded magazines?
Oh, I think that's a little preparation has been achieved. I think that's what it says.
Yeah, those are loaded mags. Okay, they looked like stacks of gold bullion. And then I thought, no, wait a minute. I'm seeing some. Okay, I got it now.
Hey, that's pretty impressive there, I must say. John, you feel like you're letting people down sometimes. You give them all this information. I try to connect the dots, but we just need to be realistic. We need to be prepared. I always say knowledge is power. If you're empowered with knowledge, then you're not going to panic when something happens. Too bad for the other folks and the normalcy bias, but, my company is IDP Consulting Group. Here, as you can see, and, in Chapter 8 of my book, I refer to the investment triangle as seen here. And you have cash and growth on either side, and then precious metals as a core position at the bottom. And I would suggest, 30, 40% of your liquid assets in metals, 80% of that probably should be in silver. Eric Sprott, by the way, is a billionaire in Canada. He says 80% of his net worth is in silver.
Is that right, 80%?
Did you know that, Eric Sprott? I mean, yeah. It's about the way I see it, because it's the most undervalued. It has the most utility, the most upside potential. So anyway, there's more in my book, and you can get it at my website, chuckcoppus.com. Maybe you've seen the banner there, but there is also a link in the library at CTM as well. And as a special offer today, John, I'd like to send, for everyone who orders a book on my website for the next few weeks, I'll send out 2 books for the price of one. They need to read one, and then they need to pass one on to a friend, a loved one, someone they care about, and read that, because there's a lot of good information in Chapter 8 there. And I include a DVD, two-hour DVD that I did and so on. So anyway, folks can go to my website. They can make a PayPal secure payment there and sign up for my newsletter, too. I think you're on my list, right, John?
Absolutely.
And okay. So sign up for that at my website and name and email. I'll send it. If you want to send me, if you do that, I'll send you a 20-point checklist of what people ought to be doing right now. So if you sign up for the newsletter, I'll send you that. Here is something called Exeter's Pyramid. This is John Exeter, if you see that. It's an upside-down pyramid, and it's actually a risk weighting. It's by asset class, with government liabilities at the top and real estate, municipal bonds, fiat currency, and then finally gold, you know, at the bottom, and certainly silver there. And this is what the banksters know, you know, in this next slide. Look at this. They've been net buyers for the first time since 1988. Now, look, that tells you all you need to know about risk aversion right there. The banksters themselves are running a confidence game, and they're buying all they can get. So all the gold mine in the world, you know, would fit into a 60-foot square cube. Think about that. Today's value, I just heard the other day, is $6 billion. Is it $6 trillion? $6 trillion in trillions of dollars of assets out there. It's just not enough to go around. According to this chart, if you can see this, 163, this is the year, this seems to be the year that we've hit peak gold production, and this goes back to a 20-year cycle based on peak discovery of gold in 1995. I don't think people know this. I didn't know this. I put it in one of my newsletters. This is really bullish for gold if you look at that chart there. Something else we need to understand is how the U.S. dollar gold index relates to each other in this next slide. It's inversely related. In other words, up and down. It's not always this way, but all commodities right now are priced in U.S. dollars since, 1944. But when the index goes up, it pushes gold down and silver, and that's what we see today. So the index right now is up 20%. The dollar index, the dollar strength in the last year. Well, this is conversely, you know, we see metals down 20%. Metals are up in every other currency, Europe, Japan, you know. Gold and silver is up in these other currencies. In fact, in Japan, they even pay a 17% value-added tax, and they still can't keep up with the demand, you know. So this is going to reverse someday. It's going to be in our favor. So, you know, in the past 10 years, we can see in this next chart, we can see the worldwide silver sales have exceeded gold sales by a 5-to-1 margin, roughly there, as you can see. Last year, the U.S. Mint sold 100 times more ounces of silver than gold, just on an ounce basis, you know. The U.S. Mint had to suspend sales. We know in July they had 5 million ounces sold. That was practically a new record, and they were closed for 2 weeks.
That's pretty weird.
I mean, and the price went down. Yeah, that's the laws of supply and demand, you know. This pace is probably going to exceed 44 million, you know, this year, maybe 50 million. I mean, this is the kind of demand you see. This is not, you know, Harry Dent talks about metals going down and, you know, in the basement. You know, I mean, the gold eagles have jumped significantly, more than double in July right now. People don't get this. Did you see that Mark Dice video? Of course you did.
Yeah.
He was trying to sell a 10-ounce bar of silver for
$10. Can you believe that?
He said 99 cents. 99 cents.
Yeah, I was going to trade that girl a box of crackers. She wouldn't do it. And she's standing right, and they're standing right in front of a gold and silver metal store.
Right in front of a store. Yeah.
Well, that's your voting public. So imagine how much more stupid the ones who can't even come up with an ID anywhere are. And they are stupid. And here's the thing. It sounds mean. Well, sometimes the truth is a little bit mean. But mean means you're deliberately ugly. Sometimes the truth is just a little bit ugly. And the fact is that stupid people exist. And it makes no difference what you say or do. They will not be shifted from their position. You can show them. You can demonstrate until you're, you know, blue in the face that, look, this is how this works and this is what's going to happen. They don't want to believe it, and therefore, no matter what evidence you present them, they won't believe it. They're not going to change. And no, you just have to go past those people and go on. But you certainly don't want them voting your leaders in. You really don't, because they'll fall for absolutely anything.
And these people vote. You run into them all the time, you know. I mean, I have to be careful. Sometimes, you know, you just meet them and they go, oh, what's your book all about, you know. So you have to kind of choose your discussion. I mean, some of my neighbors, I've met some of my neighbors, you know, and they kind of want to know what you're about. And sometimes I just say, oh, I'm a writer, and just let it go at that, you know. I don't want to get into it too much.
Yeah.
I think Einstein said he knew the universe was infinite, but he didn't know if it was infinite or not, but he said stupidity was infinite. And when people vote like that. So Mark Dice, he's a lot of fun. And, you know, Harry Dent has said some things on your program, and he's not here to defend himself. But I'm just going to say that I think he treats gold and silver like it's another commodity. In fact, I think he does, like aluminum or copper. You know, gold and silver is money. You know, we all know that. And he only sees it as an inflation hedge, and we have deflation, so you don't really need it. So it's going to go out of favor, and people don't want it. And, you know, I always wonder, I mean, has he consulted the Chinese who are aggressively acquiring? How about the banks themselves? How about the U.S. Mint, which has to close its doors, you know? So you would say that if we were genuinely in a bear market, you know, and if we saw that as a trend. In other words, he's going by price on the paper market, not the physical that we see. And, you know, it's not just an inflation hedge. It's for safety, you know, right now. Otherwise, we'd be seeing prices drop, you know, during this. It doesn't happen during demand like we see it today. It's just very distorted. It's all rigged, you know. I hate it. I'm in this trenches all the time. We've been in a four-year bear market, really. But business is good as ever, you know. People, you know, there are some people who get it. I'd like to see perhaps Harry Dent debate Jim Rickards or maybe Chris Powell over at Gata. I think that would be a good, you know, interview. But
why not? I mean, that day could come. Stranger things have happened. That'd be a lot of fun to observe. And just let them sort it out, because I'm sure no matter how it went, we'd all be better for the conversation. So why not?
Well, you know where Chris Powell would go. He's with the Gold Antitrust Action, Gata.org, and they've documented the collusion, you know, of the central banks to the London gold pool. I mean, you know, this has been going on for years. I mean, you know, so it's just a battle. It's a capitulation. I think we're going to win that battle. In this chart here, I only recommend pure gold and silver coins. As seen here, avoid all numismatic, semi-numismatic coins. They have way too much premium on those and so on. Right now, gold and silver is 20% below the cost of production. Due to the suppression schemes, and the miners, I think, have lost $2 billion last year. So, you know, something really has to give here. The miners are starting to protest to the regulators and everything. It's becoming too obvious, John. I mean, I call it Crimex, you know, over there in New York. The paper derivatives right now is 121-1 for every ounce of silver. That's fractional reserve metals market, just like the Federal Reserve. It's just a fractional reserve system. They're just, you know, they don't have the underlying assets there. They're going to have a run, just like a bank run. They're going to have delivery defaults.
Well, meaning when everybody wants to cash in, and it's not going to be, the product's not going to be there.
That's backwardation seems to point to that. That's what they call force majeure. It's forcing the contract, and they have to settle in cash.
I personally thought that's why the price of gold has dropped over $100. I saw it up over 12 for a while. Now it's not. It hadn't even cracked 11 yet. I don't think it has.
No. Well, that was that.
Well, what I mean is if the price drops a little bit, then don't they get to pay off with fewer dollars worth of gold?
Well, they don't have any to deliver anyway. I mean, you know, most it's a casino. It's a paper casino there.
Well, what I'm saying is if these people bought these derivatives, they were in at 12, and they go, I want to cash out. And it's like, well, it's only worth it's worth a little bit less than $1,100 now. It's like, okay, I'll take it. Well... The difference
these are naked. These are naked shorts. These are concentrated shorts, and they don't ever intend to take delivery. But there's coming a day when they will do that. You know, the current ratio to gold and silver is 74-1 right now. It should be classically 15-1. In fact, some of the miners are saying 10-1, 10-1, 75, $150 silver. We could have $5,000 gold. You've heard people say this: Rickards, Peter Schiff, everybody. That would be a $300 an ounce silver. That day could very well come. So, you know, one thing I agree with Harry Dent is copper's in a six-year low. They call it Dr. Copper because it's always a sign of the economy. But 75% of silver today mined is from copper mining. So if copper mining is at a low activity, that just means less silver at the margin, you know. So that's the way I see that. I think silver is good in an inflation or a deflation argument because you still have that demand. And we haven't seen anything yet. I mean, nothing. J.P. Morgan, look at this. He said that gold and silver is money. Everything else is credit. And just remember that. This is the old man himself. And it's what we're seeing today is really Gresham's law. You know, just bad money is driving out good money. That's an economic law. It means that bad paper money, nobody wants it, and they're trying to get rid of it. You know, in Greece, you talk about the velocity of money. They were buying appliances, cars, jewelry. Velocity of money was really working. You know, the economy was really booming. Yeah, they're all trying to get rid of their money.
All right, tell you what.
Trying to get out of it.
We got to pull the reins up short here and take a 10 pause for just a second. So we're going to do that, and we'll be right back. And I want you to pick up right where you left off, okay?
Hey, you know, really, they say that wealth is never destroyed; it's just transferred. And buying metals is like fire insurance. You don't buy fire insurance after your house is on fire. You've heard that, and you know that's of course that's an area I can assist people with. I do depository accounts in the northern Midwest and so on. But you know, I can help people assist them in metals, but you don't have to buy from me. I'm just saying you need to do this. You need to get into pure gold and silver and, you know, and do some of that. Do something right now. I mean, this is the trend. They say the trend is your friend, you know. So there is a website. It's called goldsilversecurity.com. And the only reason I mention that, they have unique storage ideas, elite home solutions, hidden walls, things like that. But they have a pretty good article there that you need to see, goldsilversecurity.com. It's not for everybody, but, you know, it's they're trying to assist people in this area. See, we're forced to become our own bankers. This is what Gresham's Law is all about, you know. In fact, that goes back to Sir Gresham, John Gresham or James, back in England, in London, probably about the 18th century. So the Queen's money was bad, and, you know, so it made everybody take the money. You know, they weren't using the government money. And I don't want to use the government's money. Listen, I don't keep too much in the banking accounts that I have. I clear them quick, and, you know, just you want to lower your exposure to the banking system. I can also assist people with precious metal IRAs, as you can see here in this slide. This is the U.S. retirement funds. There's about $20, $24 trillion out there. It's estimated that the public ownership of gold and silver is less than 1%, as you can see there. And just look at that little tiny sliver. You know, you're not going to get this advice from your financial advisor, your brokers. They're not going to do that. U.S. retirement funds, as you can see in this slide, they've been inflated to $24 trillion now since 1980. A 24-fold increase or something, you know. Currently, there is $200 trillion in financial assets. Look at this slide. This is a 170. As you can see in this pie chart,
gosh,
look at that. That's $200 trillion of, I mean, I'm talking insurance contracts, stocks, bonds, every other asset. And only $3 trillion is held by central banks and the public. That's 1.5% by the central banks, that one sliver, and then 1.5% by the public. And that's pretty consistent with what we see in the pension fund retirement sector. So think of the humanitarian crisis that'll cause when people lose all their assets. I mean, we have a saying in this business that gold and silver can never go to zero. You know, other things can. Just ask the people in Zimbabwe or some, you know. We have $24 billion today would buy all the available silver in the world, eligible for delivery. I mean, there's 1,800 billionaires, according to Forbes magazine. I mean, $24 billion, John, that's all there is to go around. And it's getting pretty tight out there. I think we're going to see delivery defaults, and it could start occurring who knows when. Certainly can't go on forever. You know, it just can't. So precious metals IRA, if you see in this next slide, half my clients that I have have these accounts. It's a tangible alternative. It's with low fees. There's no penalties. It's tax-deferred gain. That's the best part of it all within the account is it's all tax-deferred capital gain. It's flexible terms and, you know, just peace of mind. I mean, this is your pension funds. You're not, you don't want to be in that 99 percentile that has all their assets over there in paper. And toll-free number there if they want to give me a call. It's 855-860-6800. But, you know, again, I I'm not saying you need to get something through me or anything. It's just, you know, you need to do this. People worry about confiscation of accounts or metals, especially gold. I think that's really overblown. I don't want to get into it now. If you sign up for my newsletter, I'll send you a report on that. Put that into perspective, really. I think the ones pushing the confiscation issue, John, are those who are selling semi-numismatic overpriced coins. They want to scare people like FDR did something in 33. And as Mike Maloney says, it wasn't confiscation at all. It was really nationalizing. They nationalized the gold. That's all they did. They paid the people. They paid them. So it's overblown. In fact, if that's the reason, I say you ought to get more silver anyway. Just that's another good reason to get the silver. So especially in these IRA accounts, that's how they should be funded. But for managed investment accounts, I recommend call my friend Mike Meixler. See him here. He's a Ron Paul fan, Austrian macroeconomic portfolio. It's really hard to find a good guy out there, and we're not giving out investment or soliciting investment advice here, but Mike's the one I defer to. He's pretty smart on this. His toll-free number is there as well, 866-537-4044, so for a consultation. And again, I would get out of the banking system. When it comes to cash, we didn't get into bail-ins, but you know you can see this coming. The capital exchange controls still exist in Greece. They're probably going to last one or two more years. They still have them in Cyprus, I understand. I mean, this could happen here in the U.S. That means you can't get your money in or out of the bank or in or out of the country. It means they start restricting it. And worst of all, they start bailing it in. And I really believe that's coming. It's going to come a day. They're going to make you a Class A stockholder, a shareholder of their, an unsecured creditor of your bank deposit. Now they really think it's their asset, and it is a liability. So anyway.
Well, read the agreement you sign when you open an account. You'll find out that what you've effectively done is loan the bank your money. I mean, that's effectively what you've done, and they will try to pay you back. They'll try very hard.
It is so simple what they do. It repels the mind. That's what Galbraith said. I mean, They have your money, and they'll say, sorry, we don't have it. In fact, if you try to withdraw $5,000-$10,000, I mean, they'll have to call the manager, come back Friday. You know, they don't have it. That's fractional reserve banking, you know. So, I mean, there's been some good books written on preparation. If you can see in the next slide here, we need to be prepared, and I think need to get some toilet paper, John.
Yes. I think we ought to get a bunch of it in TP the White
House.
Bunch
of it. Did you know? You know, the people in Venezuela, they're paying people to stand in line for them just to get toilet paper over there. So I think that's 27 rolls of toilet paper there. So people need to see that. Yeah, get toilet paper. There's a lot of good books out on this topic. John Wesley Rawls is almost a legend in the prepper community. And he's been on your show, I believe.
Oh, yes.
James has his website is survivalblog.com.
Yeah, he's a very cool guy. We liked him a lot.
Yeah, well, I've talked to him a couple times. You know, I mean, it's really good. I mean, you go to that website, that's all that you'll need. You know, I mean, so much there. He takes it pretty serious. He's pretty hardcore. Another book here I found is The Prepper's Blueprint. This is a really good one, written by Tess Pennington. His website's readynutrition.com. And, of course, another site is beprepared.com, as seen here. That's emergency essentials. I've gotten stuff through them, and they're really good. They have a good catalog. They'll send you a free catalog, whatever. So, and, of course, your store, John, the CP, you have a store on your website that has food items. I didn't know that. You got $60 to $800. People, you need to go look at that. You got seeds, water filters, radiation detectors, and electronic filters. What is that, John?
Those are EMF detectors.
EMS?
The Stetzer filters. Let me tell you what. Now, this sounds like woo-woo, but it's not. When I just, you know, back before we started handling them, I just bought them. You know, I didn't get slack on the price or anything. I just bought them. Just took my own money, bought them. Started plugging them in all over the place. And you get a little meter with them also. And you plug this meter in, and you see, people go, why do I need the meter? It's like, because you need the meter. I think it's a buck and a quarter, meaning 100 and a quarter. But you plug this thing into various sockets, and you get, and on the back of the instrument, it says what's acceptable and what's okay and what's definitely not acceptable. And I think, I want to say over 60 is not good. I had some plugs that were going up to like 1,600. When you plug one of these filters in, it goes.
And again, what does this do?
It cleans it, effectively. What it does is it cleans up the electric circuit to the point that you don't get all these transient frequencies that are actually being broadcast all over the place. These filters actually nullify. And like I say, this isn't some snake oil or something. Here, use this.
I want to get one.
These things really work, and they. And a lot of people really are sensitive to this stuff, and we have instruments, and some of them are, I mean, nothing that's any good is cheap. It's just not, you know. I mean, some things are, but I can't think of anything right now. It's all relative. But some of these instruments, if you're over by cell towers or you're by high tension power lines or any of that, or a phalanx of smart meters, or whatever, you flip this thing on, it'll tell you real quick exactly how much radiation is hitting you. Electromagnetic radiation is hitting you, and it's
I'll tell you,
some people, I mean, it makes them just crazy. It really does. There are a lot of things. You see a lot of mental illness out there, but let's think it over for just a second. I'll be brief. If you're drinking if you're intaking chemicals through your water supply and your food supply or your GMOs, you know, you may think that stuff tastes good, but it's not good for you. And then you have all this EMR flying around all over the place. This is a recipe for something odd and not good to happen to your health. Namely, it goes down. I mean, they're already talking about how dementia is beginning to hit people that are like in their late 40s, in their 50s. It's not hitting people in their 80s or 90s. It's hitting people who are young. And you know, they say 60 is the new 40 now. I think that's true, as long as you can, you know, as long as you can hang in there and keep playing the game, meaning stay alive and maintain your health. That's what I mean by playing the game. But there's a lot of stuff out there stacked against you. But again, I say, for every measure, there's a countermeasure. You just need to become aware of it and then act on it. It doesn't do. It's like a book that's unread. It's not doing you any good. It's taking up space. You find out what to do it. You know, act.
And you know, too, you're talking about invisible stuff that we can't see. I mean, you know, that's like, the radiation, for example. I have a client up in Canada. He says there's no fish up there, and what's washing up is radioactive. And he takes a little meter with him to the grocery store. And, of course, I juice and do a lot of vegetables and stuff. And he goes, oh, yeah, it's in there too, you know. And so I'm kind of spooked. I mean, I don't want to get any salmon that's, you know, from the Pacific, you know, and seafood. So that's we could get into that Fukushima thing. But look, these are things you need to know, and I think your website's well put together. You have a lot of good stuff there. I was looking around. So seeds, water filters, it's all there. So, you know, but just to conclude, John, I think, you know, I always say trust the Lord, but keep your powder dry.
Yeah.
And you know, we need to realize, I want to conclude with a little ultimate preparation, some hope and inspiration for people, for those viewing, listening. And I know I speak for James Rawls and all Catherine Albrecht, Pastor Horn, Ty Bollinger, our buddy, Greg Hunter, and Pat Wood. You know, we're in a battle between good and evil, but we're going to win this, you know. Times are going to get tough. I always say God's never promised a smooth flight, just a safe landing. And it's looking pretty dark, but the darkest hour is before the dawn. And that's why we pray, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. So, you know, my degree's in theology, and only a Christian worldview really answers what I call life's three big questions. You can see here in this slide. These are the ultimate questions in life. You know, the Greek philosophers, speaking of Greece, they used to think a lot about, you know, where did I come from? Why am I here? And where am I going? And those are challenging questions. It's in my book, and you know, an evolutionary or a naturalistic worldview, as Chris Putnam puts it, you know, says we've just evolved. There's no purpose, and death is just the beginning of, you know, it's the end, you know. But a biblical worldview, you know, says we have a creator, and we're here to know him, and death is just the beginning of eternity. We want to be sure about that. So, I mean, we're all going to die someday, and there's only two, you know, views of the history of death, two histories of death in this 176 here. It says we're created, you know, we're created in God's image through Adam, and no death, there was really no death before Adam. Death is a result of Adam's sin. It didn't precede it, it followed it. You know, it was the curse, and Jesus came to pay that penalty for our sin, and you know, all who trust in him conquer death, have eternal life. And death is just a temporary part of history, as you can see on this little chart here. It's just temporary, you know. It's an intrusion. An evolutionary worldview says that death is permanent. We've always had it. We'll always have it in the future, millions of years. And this is really a false view. And you have one life to live, you know. There's really not any reincarnation. I don't think you get a second chance. This is it. And you know, Jesus in the New Testament, he's even called the last Adam in this slide, 177. Through Adam's sin, death entered into the human race. That's what it says in Romans 5, chapter 5. And prior to the sin in the Garden of Eden, the world was perfect, you know, as you can see. I mean, death and pain is an intrusion, suffering, you know, this life. And in the New Testament, the Lord is referred to as the last Adam. The second Adam, if you will, because he removed the curse for all who trust in him, the curse of death. Someday there'll be a new heaven and a new earth, a complete restoration, you know. So that's why we call it good news. I mean, this, we got a lot of bad news in the world, but this is really, this gives us some hope, I mean, you know, for the future. And, you know, I always say that Christianity is not a religion, as you can see here, and it's a relationship. You know, religion is man reaching up to God in their own way, their own religious ideas. And Christianity is God reaching down to man. It's very different. You know, it's God took the initiative. So I always say the heart of the problem is the problem of the heart, all of our hearts. You know, we've all sinned. We've all fallen short of the glory, his glory, it says. And we've talked a lot here about debt around the world, debt everywhere, debt and states are in debt. And people, and we all collectively have a debt issue. We have a debt problem. Someone sent me a Christmas card and it said, he came to pay a debt he didn't owe because we owe a debt we couldn't pay. I just think that's really sums it up. You know, we all have a sin debt that we can't pay, and we can't be good enough to get to heaven. You know, he did it for us. And that's why the Lord, he said that he's the only way, as you can see here, you know, for the Son of Man came to seek and save that which is lost. We're in a dark world. We have a lot of stuff, you know, lost. He came to seek and save that which was lost back in the garden, if you will. And, you know, the most famous verse in the New Testament, people familiar, is God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten Son. Whoever believes in him wouldn't perish but have eternal life. So that's really the good news that we share with people, and I'm not ashamed to do that. I think we need to speak up, and you know, historically, we, as you can see here, we celebrate his birth at Christmas time. Certainly, his resurrection at Easter morning, and we also celebrate changed lives, like the Apostle Paul, and he's still over 2,000 years. He's still changing lives today, and he changed my life back in 1979 in August. 36 years ago. So, I mean, that's the good news we share. It's in my book as well. And I pray that people make that discovery. I hope that someone listening there, I would say eternity is a long time to be wrong. But, you know, someday soon, God's going to set up his final kingdom. Look at this, 181. This is, as seen here, Daniel's statue. We see the final 10 kings are forming or something in Europe. That last Gentile world power. And it says, in the days of those 10 kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed. It will endure forever. And that stone that's coming out of the heavens is a supernatural stone. And, of course, that's the Lord himself coming from heaven, and his coming and destroys all the kingdoms. Now, it kind of tells us we're at the end of the line, doesn't it? I mean, we're kind of right at the end of that statue there. And so I always conclude with, a favorite verse, and I sign all my books with this. It's 2 Peter 3:13. It says, according to his promise, we're looking for a new heavens and a new earth where righteousness dwells. And it's just it's a great verse. It just kind of sums it up for me. I mean, if you want to talk about a new world order, that's the new world order I'm looking for, amen. So, you know, I always say it's time to get right. It's time to get right with God, or, you know, get left behind. So I pray that people do that, and, you know, get my book. If you do, I'll give you two books for the price of one. And, you know, John, keep up the good work. You're doing a great work up there.
What a fantastic presentation. I said this, I think, during the program. I think I also said it during one of our breaks. If people watch this and they don't understand now what you've laid out, you've done your part, you know.
Well.
and you being with us, I think we've done ours too. So we shall see.
Well, John, I always say I'm just the messenger, right?
Me
and
too.
And so are you. And look, go to this next slide, Mr. Ghost. If people are watching on YouTube, here is the Caravan of Midnight website. You know, it's where you can subscribe. It's $60 a year. I mean, that's pretty cheap. And, you know, tell other people to sign up, you know. And if people want a signed copy of my book, and they can go to my website, chuckhoppus.com. And it's linked to my business website and so on. But anyway, also on your website, I got one of your keychains right here. Look at this, people.
All right.
Caravan to Midnight. Can you see that?
Mouse pad.
You got that? And we don't want to leave out, last of all, mess my hair up.
The duty cap.
How's that look?
It looks excellent. A buddy of ours, a friend of the caravan, sent a picture from the Wailing Wall in Israel, and he had his beanie on.
Oh, he had
his wool cap on. A beanie's got that. It stripes with a propeller. I don't know why we still call them beanies, but anyway, I didn't want to give his name out because I thought he might not like that. But he did send us a photograph with him wearing this thing. I didn't want to put his face up on here either. He might appreciate that even less. But
Great advertisement here. All kinds of trinkets here.
Caravan to Midnight. That cap, man.
Hey, how'd you come up with that name, Caravan to Midnight?
Oh, well, you know, I give myself, like Sherlock Holmes, I give myself away when I explain, right?
You like the Oasis.
A lot of people are into this desert thing, though. Have you noticed that?
And
midnight, people are all over it, you know?
Oh, okay.
I think we started a trend here.
Oh, well. He did start a trend.
Yeah.
Wow, John, it's been great to be with you. This has been fun. Didn't know if we'd pull this off. You know, I don't know what I'm going to do for an encore now. What am I going to do? You know, I think I covered everything in my book. And
anyway. I'll tell you, if things get as bad as we think they're going to get, maybe you can be formulating a way out of it that might go outside the parameters, the content of this program, whatever it might be, including, like, I think, well, we don't have any cars. We don't have any gasoline. I know. Let's start walking that way, and you make the call which direction we go, okay?
Hey. Great, great honor to be with you, John, always. You're my buddy.
Right back at you, Charles. I appreciate it very much. You are Sir Charles, you know.
Yes, I am, Sir Charles.
You are an Ark Knight. Well, God bless,
you,
sir.
Thank
Listen,
you.
Thanks. That was a lot of work you put into that presentation, I think it was quite good.
So I hope it helps to communicate a little bit. If your listeners, if they're listening, they should go on and view it. So anyway, that's good.
All right.
Thanks, John. God bless.
God bless you, sir. See you. Well, I thought that was pretty amazing, really. I mean, it was like a six-hour economics course in about, I don't know, less than six actual hours. Imagine having to sit through a six-hour course in university and get all that, all those notes and everything. But as members, you can play any of this back that you wish at any time and pull your friends into it. You know, the more people know about what's really going on, the more difficult it will be for those who are trying to perpetrate this stuff to get over on us. And that's what it's all about. We're their property. Your money in your bank account belongs to them, technically. We technically belong to them. You know, once upon a time you still have to sign up for Selective Service, don't you? You still have to do that? Yeah, you still have to register for Selective Service. You don't have to actually be called up for a draft, but gee, how pleasant that was. Back, you're a kid, effectively. Oh, yeah, you can carry a gun, all that. Well, you can carry a gun when you're 12 years old. You're a little 22, go out there shooting at squirrels and such if you're hungry. That's what was done commonly all over the country up until, I don't know, what, 40 years ago? It's probably still being done in some parts of the country. So just because you're carrying a gun and wearing a uniform doesn't mean you're any less of a kid. It just means your responsibility is a little heavier. And sit there in front of the TV set and see if your birthday falls within numbers 1 through 100. And if they do, then you're on your way to war, boy. Yeah, that's the kind of a country I want my progeny to grow up in. One just like that. Until we meet again, I remain your not-so-soft revolutionary servant, John B. Wells. Keep those eyes up. Sharpen those critical thinking skills. Exercise caution in your daily affairs. I got them slightly out of order, but the points are still there. The major point is, make ready for what's to come. I'll be seeing you.